From Jakarta, here is Voice of Indonesia with Indonesia Today. News, information, and entertainment from Indonesia, only on Indonesia Today.
Service Voice of Indonesia from Indonesia the World with the news. The Indonesian government through the Ministry of Trade has delivered a commitment to continue protecting consumers through a reliable measurement system. Full detail by Andy Romdoni.
Commitment of the Indonesian government both at the central and regional level to protect consumers in terms of measuring and weighing. He conveyed this in relation to the commemoration of World Metrology Day 2025 and the 150th anniversary of the Metro Convention, which took the theme Measurement for All Times for All People. In a statement delivered virtually and monitored from Jakarta, Budi Santoso said, "A reliable measurement system can support fair, transparent, and competitive trade both domestically and in the export market."
Melalui tema pengukuran untuk segala masa, untuk semua orang, saya yakin bahwa sistem pengukuran yang andal dapat.
Through the theme of measurement for all times for all people, I'm convinced that a reliable measurement system can support fair, transparent, and competitive trade both domestically and in the export market. Accurate measurement is not just a technical matter, but the foundation of trust in trade. For that, collaboration between the central government and local government is needed to provide protection to consumers and foster the responsibility of the business world in terms of the accuracy of the measurement and weighing measurements and goods in a package state. Meanwhile, the acting head of the Indonesian National Standardization Agency, Justinus Kristianto Widiwardono, said that the commemoration of World Metrology Day was marked by the signing of the Metro Convention on May 20, 1875, by 17 countries. In the Metrology Seminar for World Metrology Day 2025, he said that although only a few countries signed the convention at that time, the Metro Convention had become an important milestone in ensuring that measurement standardization took place systematically.
Walaupun hanya 17 negara, tapi adalah momen yang penting.
Although only 17 countries, it is an important moment because with this Metro Convention, standardization related to this measurement can take place more systematically. Furthermore, Justinus Kristianto Widiwardono said that the Metro Convention had also become the basis for the formation of the Bureau International de Poids et Mesures, or International Bureau of Weights and Measures, which had become the center of measurement standardization and had established the metric system as the international system for measuring quantities.
Meanwhile, Indonesian President affirms strengthening of Indonesia-Thailand strategic relations. More detail by Dora Pardede.
Indonesian President Prabowo Subianto emphasized that Indonesia and Thailand have established diplomatic relations for 75 years and their relationship has now entered the stage as a strategic partner. In his press statement after meeting with Thai Prime Minister Pattongtarn Sinawatra at Government House, Bangkok, Monday, the President revealed that in the bilateral meeting, Indonesia and Thailand discussed a number of strategic partnerships in many important sectors.
Tadi kami membahas.
Earlier, we discussed the basis for strategic partnerships in various sectors, including the security and defense sector, trade and investment, food and energy, security and regional and global issues.
President Prabowo explained that in the security and defense sector, the two countries agreed to increase cooperation to overcome various cross-border challenges, including cybercrime, human trafficking, and drug trafficking. In the economic aspect, Indonesia and Thailand are committed to increasing bilateral trade, which has reached $18 billion. In addition, both countries encourage cooperation in the halal industry, digital economy, and aviation technology. At the regional and global levels, Indonesia and Thailand show the same concern for the ongoing conflicts, especially in Palestine and Myanmar. Both countries agreed to encourage an immediate ceasefire in Palestine. Dora Pardede for Voice of Indonesia from Indonesia to the World.
And listen, that was the news from Voice of Indonesia from Indonesia to the World. And the words of his Voice of Indonesia from Indonesia to the World. Listener, you are listening and also watching to the Voice of Indonesia with the English program on VONews.id, application RRI Digital, and also the RRI Net channel. I'd like to welcome people who are watching from the RRI Net channel. More from Indonesia is coming up next, and we'll be also talking about the National Awakening Day. And before all that, let's listen to this one. We got Dewi Dewi with Begitu Salah, Begitu Benar.
Aku bahagia dengar kata cintamu, tapi aku sedih menerima kenyataan bahwa tak hanya diriku yang menjadi milikmu, bahwa tak hanya diriku yang menemani tidurmu, bahwa tak hanya diriku yang selalu ada di hatimu selamanya.
are still tuned to Eddie. What's up? It's Voice of Indonesia from Indonesia to the World. This is a very nice classic from 2010. Begitu Salah, Begitu Benar, or So Right But So Wrong by Dewi Dewi. And more from Indonesia is coming up next. I'll stay tuned on Eddie World Service, Voice of Indonesia. In making sure the best choice was made to prevent or minimize flood in Jakarta, everyone was involved, including those in the neighboring city, Bogor, introducing the Katulampa Floodgate. Located in the city of Bogor, Katulampa is one of the most important points of the Ciliwung River that spans across the mountainous part of Bogor to the coast of Jakarta. Built in 1911, today, the 74-meter floodgate still plays many roles, including providing water for Bogor City and the Bogor Palace, irrigation for agriculture, as well as observation posts for flood early warning for every part of Greater Jakarta passed through by Ciliwung River. To ensure these functions run well, some watchers are posted 24/7. Right in the face of Katulampa floodgate. These watchers would take care of the gates of Katulampa as well as the piling garbages in the river. The watchers of Katulampa believe that by taking care of the nature will take care of us.
Voice of Indonesia.
Voice of Indonesia from Indonesia to the world. I kid you not, I promise you to talk about the National Awakening Day. And it seems that for this year, it has been 117 years since, well, the Budi Utomo organization was founded, which marked the awakening of Indonesia during the struggle for independence. And we would like to see the how the day is still so very relatable, but in nowadays context, because then and now is very different. And we will talk about it with the lecturer in the Master of Applied Linguistics Study Program at Faculty of Cultural Sciences, Al-Azhar University, Indonesia. We have Ibu Nurdiana Ibrahim Usman. Assalamualaikum, Bu Nurdiana.
Waalaikumsalam warahmatullahi wabarakatuh.
Good afternoon, ma'am. And I'd like to, well, quickly go to the very important question. We see that, as I told the listener, it's been 117 years or even the 117th National Awakening Day. And how would you see how the day is still relatable in today's context?
Okay, first of all, thank you for having me in this Voice of Indonesia program. I think although it's been for ages, I mean, the organization of the National Awakening, founded by Budi Utomo, I think it's all has always been relatable with a current situation, because the history says that the beginning of the original idea of the organization was to improve Indonesian students at the time, okay, their critical thinking skills and their access to education. So I think it's a never-ending process. It's a never-ending, idea. So it has always been there, you know. If we talk about the awakening of this nation. Awakening of the national education. So, I think that's it.
But is it specific only in education sector, ma'am?
Yeah, well, I can tell you more about other than education, but since I work as a lecturer and a teacher, so I probably will focus more on education instead of other aspects or other fields like politics.
Okay,
or economy.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we narrow it down to education, but can we talk about the younger generation, because you're a lecturer, of course you face the face to face with with the younger generation. This is a very cliche question, actually.
Yeah.
Do you think that our young generation still are aware about the national awakening spirit, not only today, but the whole spirit of the national awakening?
I don't think so. It's declining, I think. Why is it declining? It's because of the social media and the advancement of technology. I'm not blaming the rapid movement of technology and digital media or digital era, but young generation, based on my observation, it tends to, they lack of exposure themselves with crucial or important information by reading. You know, if they tend to find out information, okay, through short texts like social media, on the social media like Instagram Shorts and Reels. So if I talk about my career, my job as a teacher or as a lecturer, okay, I'm very concerned with the decline of my students' critical thinking skills and then critical literacy. Do you know what? Budi Utomo started with the idea of education and then being critical to all aspects that they lived in their life, right? Okay, so I think the major concern here is, young generation has a lack of critical thinking and critical literacy, which is, if you start with less knowledge, less kinds of skills like the way we think, the way we view the way we view any phenomena, okay, social phenomena, okay, without basing on reliable information, okay, because young generation tend to rely on reels and shorts, which actually cannot give them deeper information about what's going on. Okay, yeah, so that's the beginning, actually, of if we want to awake further, improve further, develop further, let's start from reading habit. Reading habit, okay, leads to critical thinking, leads to critical literacy. Okay, so that's my major concern in terms of education.
And if I may add a little bit comedically, we can say that the younger generation cannot avoid the WhatsApp group of the family because they accuse that the older people are lacking of digital literacy.
Yeah.
But in fact, as you said, that they do the same, actually. Because of the, how do we call it, brain rot contents, not only the memes, but also the whole thing is actually rotting the brain, lacking of critical thinking. So how do you think that we can we encourage people to even learn more? Especially now, I mean, as a lecturer, you might face a lot of students maybe, quote-unquote, cheating by using AI, even AI now. Like summarizing something, you can use AI. Is it even declining further and further? And then what can we do about it?
Yeah. So I have always told them that you lie to yourself if you use AI assistance, okay, in any subjects, any courses that you are working on. Okay, it's not you. It's not your competence. It's not your capacity. Okay, so, well... I think how can we rely on, yes, some you know, AI assistance is to some extent, it's important, but we can't just rely on AI assistance. But whereas the fact is the students now, because they, especially the Z generation and Alpha generation, so they tend to rely on AI assistance, right? Or websites, okay? Because we can find any information that we would like to have very easily through websites or through AI assistance. To some extent, that will be fine, but it will not help them to, you know, face challenges in the future. What kinds of challenges that they might have in the future? Okay, of course, it's about life, how to live this life, how to live this life, how to communicate with other people, how to work with other people. Okay, so you can't just have instant information to do that. Okay, to live the strength of the social life that we should live with, okay? But we need to work hard, okay? We need to make an effort, great effort, okay, to do so. And how can we make the effort? How can we reach, you know, the critical thinking, the critical literacy? Yeah. So I believe that critical thinking and critical literacy, yeah, to my knowledge and then to my background as a lecturer or a teacher, it's the basic skills that young generation, my students should have, okay, for living this life. Not only for the courses, for the subjects they are taking, but also for other aspects in life.
Especially when they are looking for a job. Imagine they graduated from university but lacking the skills needed at jobs. Then it will be like a lot of people graduating without even jobs. Mm. So we are still go back to the critical thinking, the lacking of reading and effort. So to make sure people do this, the reading, the effort, so that they can reach critical thinking, what need to be done in the terms of education?
Okay, yeah. In terms of the curriculum, for example, the curriculum development, teachers and lecturers should have an activity that leads the students to improve their critical thinking. So through the curriculum, not just give the give the students or ask the students, have the students do something that acquire information, okay, but they should learn how should we do in the next level with this information. So I've got A, for example. What should I do with this A? Why do I do some things with this A? Something like that. Okay, so the integration of critical thinking and critical literacy, although the government, I think, has been working hard, okay, for integrating what we call HOTS and LOTS, high-order thinking skills and low-order thinking skills in the national curriculum. But still, I think there is a very little improvement or development in the quality of the national education. It's a very work hard, but I think we can make it if we can, work together.
So the key word work together, so it's not only by the lecturer and teachers, but also, well, can I be a devil's advocate? We have been talking about the youths, but we know that youths are the produce of the previous generations then. So it also needed to be developed by the previous generations. And apparently this is quite saddening, right? We have been talking all this time, but how optimistic are you that we will finally reach not only the critical thinking but also for the awakening of our people?
To be honest, it's going to be a very hard work. Yeah, it's very challenging because it involves millions of people in this country. Okay, it's not an easy assignment, you know, to make them work together. Yeah, because one has different perception, has different opinions, has different thoughts. Not to mention we have millions of people, I said. So, yeah, it cannot, it's not an instant process, okay? But we need to stick. We need to stick and then be committed to the goal or the objective of developing this country through critical thinking and through critical literacy integrated in the national education curriculum.
Okay, so
starting from elementary school until high school, university.
So we stick together and walk together until we reach that goal together. At least we should have that in our mindset. Okay, thank you very much, Bu Nurdian. It's been a very fun, I'd like to say fun discussion. And we know we can talk further about this. We can take a lot of hours talking about this, but I wish that we not only listening to this broadcast, but we also will take an action to make sure that the critical thinking is achieved and also for the development of our country. Thank you very much, Bu Nurdiana.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Listener, that is Ibu Nurdiana, a lecturer at Al-Azhar University, Indonesia. And as we know that reading is very important for critical thinking, and then critical thinking is very important for the younger generation to be the future, the hope, the future that everybody's hope for a country. So let's do it together with the same mindset that we need to develop our country, not only in Indonesia, but also in your country. And also we share or join hands in making sure this future, this dream can be realized. So once again, happy National Awakening Day. Thank you very much for listening. And this talk can be accessed again on our YouTube channel, VOI Official.
Every May 20th, Indonesians celebrate Hari Kebangkitan Nasional, or National Awakening Day. It marks the rise of national consciousness sparked in 1908 by the formation of the first native political movement, Budi Utomo. This day reminds Indonesians of their unity, resilience, and the power of collective spirit that led to independence. More than history, it's a call to keep moving forward together, from Indonesia to the world.
Jamkan dan jangan berhenti, karena sebuah pertanyaan perlahan menghampiri, mendekat dan merusak sistem kerja otak kiri. Setiap detik berdetak menusuk-nusuk di hati, kembali teringat raut wajahmu diangan, taburan cinta mengikuti sebuah senyuman. Yo, tapi dalam hati ini tak bisa ungkapkan, nyaliku menciut terlalu siang untuk diucapkan. Sekali lagi ku ingin kau mengerti, rasa cinta ini sungguh sangat menyakiti. Tapi ku hanya malu yang tidak bermateri, dipandang sebelah mata, tak punya reputasi.
Seakan mataku tertutup, ku ingin cinta ini dapat kau sambut. Harapkan perasaan ini kau tahu, sungguh ku ingin kau jadi milikku.
Ingin sekali ku katakan aku suka padamu, namun cinta ini siksa jika aku gak ada kamu. Hendak jiwa kan mengikatmu di sisi, namun berat untuk mengucap, cukup untuk ku kagumi. A, B, C, D, ku harap kau mengerti, semua ini bukan cerita narasi deskripsi. Hanya perasaan suka namun sulit hati berkata, bukan fiktif sedikit naif, hanya sebuah realita. Cinta ini derita, ku harap kau juga merasa, apa yang ku rasa tanpa banyak tanda tanya. Rasa ini fakta, selektif bukan posesif, ku tak ingin berdusta, ku cinta kau bunga.
Seakan mataku tertutup,
You are still tuned to Radio World Service, Voice of Indonesia from Indonesia to the world, and you're listening to a song by Bonan Prakoso featuring Fade to Black with Bunga. Very nice song, which is talking about inability to express their feeling to someone. So sad, isn't it? But I'd like to be you to be happy to know more about Indonesian legendary boat or ship called Pinisi after this one.
Kalah Viagra bagai sebuah media. Cinta berlepas dirahi tanpa ada ikatan jiwa dan raga. Kalian semua berbeda, pandangan ku takkan pernah sama. Mirip hati cintanya dengan pandangan tak sama. Bukan yang menuduhku, bahkan memfonis diriku salah. Kenapa yang ku cari dan ku rasa takkan menghasilkan apa. Karena cinta, tercinta sebagai puas nafsu belaka. Takkan mengerti hati cinta, karena kau hanyalah bunga.
Seakan mataku tertutup, ingin cinta ini dapat kau sambut. Akan perasaan ini kau tahu, sungguh ku ingin kau jadi milikku. Seakan mataku tertutup, ingin cinta ini dapat kau sambut. Akan perasaan ini kau tahu,
yang jaya di lautan para milenium.
Those who were victorious at the sea is the first millennium were the Indonesian people, the Malays, none of Chinese who sailed. It was only after South could no longer access the Silk Route by land that they looked for trade routes by sea. That was in the 11th or 12th century. Before that, no, there weren't Chinese who sailed. Aren't you afraid of 8 to 9 meter waves? He said that to me. I said that in Indonesia, I've never seen waves of 9 meters. I want to see it. And he immediately shook hands with me. That's it, sir. That's it.
Di Indonesia belum pernah saya lihat 9 meter. Saya kok pengin lihat. Langsung selamat saya, Pak. Jadi oke, dia bilang.
Kalau istilah Pinisi itu sepertinya muncul pada abad ke-19, sekitarnya tahun 1830-an, 40-an.
Appeared around the 19th century in around 1830 to 40, and it refers to a type of sail that actually comes from Europe, which imitates the international term schooner catch or calf catch, which means a sail that is installed in the direction of the bow of the boat. It seems that these sails were first used in the western regions of the archipelago, such as Riau, Belitung, etc. Until the end of the 19th century, this type of sail was increasingly used towards the east. So the sail also arrived in Sulawesi, and here the sail was changed, which we know now as the Pinisi sail.
Jenis layar itu makin banyak digunakan, makin ke arah timur. Sehingga akhirnya ide layarnya itu juga tiba di Sulawesi. Dan di sini pun layarnya diubah sedemikian rupa sehingga menjadi yang kita sekarang mengenali sebagai layar Pinisi.
Indonesian people are challenged to become more resilient in facing life at sea. One of the communities that is able to run a shipping system and build ships is the Bulukumba community. However, the term Pinisi became known in the 1950s.
Istilah Pinisi itu secara umum baru muncul dalam cetakan, koran, dan sebagainya pada tahun
The term Fenisi generally only appeared in printing like newspapers and so on in the early 50s of the 20th century. In 1960, the administration of the first Indonesian president Soekarno held a competition for boats to carry kopra from Sulawesi to Jakarta. And in the newspaper, a question still arose about what Fenisi boat is, because the term Fenisi was not yet known to people at that time. Because in the fact, in the records of harbor master and so on, boats like that were still called palari. There was palari solompong, there was palari tongkong. The terms Fenisi started being known in the 80s, especially after the Fenisi was brought to Vancouver. And there, the boats which were previously called palari were then called Fenisi. So the term Fenisi, which now we really take pride in, is actually a creation after the Fenisi no longer existed.
Terutama setelah ada Fenisi Nusantara yang dibawa ke Vancouver, dan di situ, di Singapura misalnya, perahu-perahu yang sebelumnya dinamakan Polari itu mulai dinamakan Fenisi. Jadi, istilah Fenisi yang sekarang ini begitu dibanggakan, sebenarnya sesuatu ciptaan setelah yang namanya Fenisi itu sudah tidak ada lagi. Ini ingatan masyarakat tidak terlalu tepat. Ada cerita bahwa perahu yang seperti itu yang pertama kali dibangun di
People's memory are not very accurate, and there are stories that the first such boat in Ara was in 1900, but no one remembers who built it, for whom, and so on. And until World War II, in the Dutch newspaper and the harbor master reports and so on, all projects like they were recorded as palari. So the use of the word Fenisi is something new, something that hasn't been around for too long, but with the motor and Indonesian sailing boats, all of that disappeared in the 70s. This is a memory that people are quite proud of when Fenisi Nusantara was brought to Vancouver and more travel companies from abroad ordered boats like that. The term Fenisi was brought back as a proud memory of boat builders and sailors from the archipelago. The use of the word Fenisi to generalize all types of boats is actually a deflation of Indonesia's boat manufacturing wealth, because in Indonesia there are hundreds of types of boats and they all have their own names.
Istilah Fenisi itu diangkat kembali sebagai suatu ingatan kebanggaan pembuat perahu dan pelayar dari Ponto Bahari itu. Penggunaan kata Fenisi untuk memukul rata semua jenis perahu itu sebenarnya suatu suatu deflasi kekayaan pembuatan perahu Indonesia, karena di Indonesia ada ratusan jenis perahu yang semua punya nama tersendiri.
Fenisi became known worldwide since its first expedition to Vancouver, Canada in 1986, where one of the crew members is still sailing today.
Mungkin dari awal, saya waktu itu yang saya cerita tadi,
at that time, from the start, I remember it was in 85 when my team entered Galangan, and then I said I wanted to come to Canada. I hadn't applied yet. Finally, after a long time, Mr. Felipe, a Frenchman who was watching us as a witness who accepted the people, I said that you're going home, right? And at that time, many of others didn't come. I went first. So then he said, do you want to come to Canada? And I said, yes, sir, if you still need more people. Then he said, you're not afraid of waves 8 to 9 meters, he said. The same to me. Then I said, in Indonesia, I've never seen 9 meters wave. I wanted to see it. We immediately shook hands, so it was a deal. At that time, I was on the machine and also on the sail. There were also 4 people from Tanah Biru also come with me. I asked to this Navy man, how many meters are the waves? Oh, this is only 7 meters. How is the 10 meters one like? I said. Relying on 2 masts and 7 developed sails called pinisi. The wind has been the main force for Indonesian sailors since the 12th century to sail to their destination. If we sail, we just play with the sails according to the wind. Maybe there will be a change in the wind for several hours, like here yesterday. Sailing without wind for 2 hours could take one day because of the wind. Well, if you use an engine, you can calculate the speed and at what time we will arrive. Well, if we just play with the sails, we cannot predict when we will arrive.
Kapal pinisi di Banan ini asalnya dari Arab, dulu pun Pak, Sulawesi Selatan.
The Spinisi ship was built originally from Arab Ulukumba, South Sulawesi. Starting from the year before independence in 1945, after independence, it already existed before. From generation to generation, we have been able to make this ship without any finished drawings. It has been passed down from our ancestors until now. We do it without any technical knowledge. It is just based on experience and it is recognized throughout the world.
Dan di segi pengalaman saja, diakui oleh seluruh dunia. Kalau dengan finishnya, 1 tahun lebih. Tapi kali ini kami bikin di pantai, dia ke pantai Anjolosari.
With the pinisi, it took more than a year, but this time we make it on the Losari Beach. It is the fastest one because in just 2 months and a half, has been like this with 2 units with 25 people working. Yes, iron wood, BT wood, and teak wood. It only needs 3 types of wood in terms of its strength. In the sea, you can make just any kinds of wood. I used to have finishing made from BT wood, but the scarcity of BT wood forced me to use it only for the ship purpose. Now I cannot do it anymore. The deck is made of teak wood.
Sekarang tidak bisa lagi karena sudah berkurang sisa untuk pasir tulang. Deknya ini kayu jati. Minas, papan papannya disusun, kesatu-satuin.
The shoots, the planks are arranged one by one. Then they go up here. After the body is finished, then the tusks are installed. Once the tusks are installed, the road is installed, the bottom is then the gutter, then the floor, then the room. The room has all the walls and partitions made. After this, it has been put on the hub. This is lowered, then the mast is made. The mast is then put on the hose rope. The mast rope, then the sail is put on. That's it.
Tali apa? Tali seling. Tali tian. Nyapa belakang, baru pasang layarnya. Begitu.
The system and calculation for making finisi sailing ships have been known to people of Arab village Bulukumba since 19th century. However, according to a research conducted by German historian Horst Lippner, only 12 Lemo-Lemo people knew the shipbuilding system. The system is named Tatatalu.
Itu dari rumusnya begini.
That's the formula. So this is how we are ships experts, Wandi Talupi. The important thing is that we know the length, width, and height, that this is 6 meters, the length is 30 meters, the height is 3 meters. They keep installing it, and then it will be right when it hits 6 meters. Indeed, we already have experience in that aspect, without saying that it is balanced. It is already balanced because it is our technique, our experience, so that it is a precise up to 6 meters without any writing about so many or so. Each one works, each one is an expert.
Ada satu hal dan itu intinya dari warisan Duniania itu, yaitu
There is one thing that is essence of world heritage, namely what we can call a formula for making it. Many people say that boats are made without drawings and so on, and that is actually not true. There is a formula that is not made into a drawing, but made into various sizes which are recorded above the gorge. There are various bangli that are used with signs that determine the measurements, for example, the location of the pegs in the hull, the length of the planks, the location of the frame, and so on. Those who will still inherit this knowledge today are the descendants of the Lemo-Lemo people. They seem to have a formula called Tatapalu, which can produce boats up to 14 meter long. PLM boats, or whatever boats were called Pinisi in the 70s, were much bigger. So there is an impression that the Arab people at some point in 1930s to 1950s created a new manufacturing formula called Tata Apa, which could produce larger boats.
Jadi ada kesan bahwa orang Arab pada suatu saat tahun 1930-an sampai 50-an menciptakan satu rumus pembuatan yang baru yang dinamakan Tata Apa yang bisa menghasilkan perahu yang lebih besar. Membangun suatu perahu itu adalah suatu hal yang sangat-sangat rumit. Secara populer, perahu layar itu diakui sebagai
building a boat is very, very complicated things. Popularly, the sailboat is recognized as the most complicated human creation that has existed before the Industrial Revolution in the 18th century. This means that throughout human history, nothing more complicated has been built than a sailboat. If we compare the parts of number of objects in this boat, whatever there is, as far as I know, is 100 times more than a cell phone. And they all have to function the same as cell phone. If you install one small part wrongly, the cell phone won't work. It's the same as if boat is installed incorrectly. One small part of the boat will not sail. And there is another point there. Boat is not something rectangular, but it created through a curve. The curve must be harmonious. If the curve is crooked, the boat will not sail. Maybe someone remembers in high school we are taught how to calculate the curve F from X, which is the most complicated, right? Maybe those who have gone through it have all said, well, this is very difficult, but the boat can only function if the curve is harmonious. The curve can be calculated in that way. So the knowledge to create curves has been going on in the archipelago for 1,000 years. And the way of conceptualizing curves is not much different from shipwrecks from the 10th century to boats built in the mid-20th century. These things are very complicated, so they are not for public consumption because they are too complicated. But in order to deepen them and make them something to be proud of, things like that should be made more public, put forward more to the general public so that they are not reduced to only Pinisi.
Cara mengkonsepkan kurva-kurva itu tidak jauh berbeda dari kapal-kapal karam yang dari abad ke-10 dengan perahu-perahu yang dibangun pada pertengahan abad ke-20. Hal-hal itu amat-amat rumit, sehingga bukan menjadi ini barang konsumsi halayak kerana wah memang terlalu rumit. Tetapi untuk apa ya? Memperdalamnya dan menjadikannya sesuatu yang bisa dibanggakan. Hal-hal seperti itu semestinya memang lebih diumumkan, lebih dikedepankan kepada khalayak ramai supaya itu tidak direduksi atas ini sih doang.
So I'd like to say thank you very much for joining the English program of The Voice of Indonesia on RRI channel. And we'll still be here on VONS Radio and the application RRI Digital.
Sudah biasa, angin bertiup, layar berkembang, ombak.
you for joining us on Indonesia Today, only on VOI and RRINN.
digital with new look. Various collaborative content from various national programs, including live visual broadcasts, live radio broadcasts, music playlists, podcasts, video news, and various users' interaction features in the game. Various interesting content such as likes, comments, and shares, as well as live chat with broadcasters and users. Direct messaging and private chat facilities between app users are also available. RRI Digital, available on Google Store and App Store. RRI Digital.
Kita sama.